Thank you very much, Garner, and thank you very much for inviting me here today. It was an interesting telephone call I had with Garner when he rang me and asked me to come here today, and just thought about the subject matter, which is really factors that have influenced the decline in break-inner and steal offences. As police, and I've been a career police officer for some 28 years now, we tend to be very, very good at task-focused or operation-focused things, where we're locking up crooks. We're good at that. We go out and do that, you know, quite successfully. We look at some of the shorter-term things where we'll put operations around areas, but really, I don't know if we look at that much at things such as this, where we've had a significant downward trend over a long period of time in a crime type or crime types. And so, well, really, you know, why did that happen? So it was very interesting. We got our brains trust together and sort of tried to come up with some of the reasons. If I can figure out how to work this. No. This one? Ah, that one. Okay. Perhaps. This might be one. Oh, let's go back. Somehow. Okay. There we are. I don't know if that's the sole reason, but perhaps it's one factor, although I don't really think so. And forgetting about One Direction, I think that was actually the first boy band. Okay. Any difficulty here? Okay, Garner. Technical side's folded. That's all right. There we go. All right. Let's go back again. There we are. Okay. Just looking at this slide, you can really see that there has been a significant downward trend in incidents of break, enter and steal, particularly from dwelling, which is the main one we're looking at. That's the main area that has had the biggest trend. And we've been, you know, pretty successful in reducing that, unless, as Don indicated before, you live at Canamble or you're one of the 62,000 people that did have a reported break, enter and steal offence at their house in 2011. So there has been a significant reduction, but we can't rest on our laurels. There's still a lot to be done. Just looking at the further classifications, break and enter incidents, as police, we break them down into other categories. But the main reduction area has been in your break, enter and steal. Breaking in with intent is a minor reduction, but not a lot, but breaking in with intent to commit another felony, that's an offence where you may go break into a house or break into some premises and want to commit another offence, sexual assault or some other offence, that's pretty much stable. But the biggest area and the thing to take away from this slide is the biggest reduction has been in break in. We thought we'd have a look at robbery offences. They're akin to break, enter and steal offences, and there's been similar trends, probably not as great, but similar trends in the reduction of robbery offences and steal from person. There may be some factors that we'll discuss later that have also influenced those trends. Stealing, similarly, again, akin to break, enter and steal, there's been a reduction in reported stealing incidents, although there may be differences in that if you take into account the underreporting or largely underreporting of retail theft. Retail theft is certainly an issue, and it's largely underreported by industry for a number of reasons, but there is a trend showing that stealing incidents are down. Now, looking at it'll go later into some of the reasons why, but drug detections. Don spoke before about drug detections. Drug detections over that period are up. Now, if we look at a correlation between break, enter and steal offences and drug detections, you say, well, our drug detections are up, but our break and enter offences are down. Drug detections is probably a poor measure of that. It's really a measure of police proactivity. You could argue as a local area commander, if you wanted to show that your area didn't have a drug problem, you wouldn't actually look for it. You would actually, if you don't go out and get those drug detections and arrest people for drug crime, you don't have a drug problem. Unfortunately, it shows up in other areas, but that's one of the factors of it. So your drug detections are largely mirroring police activity. This is a very busy busy slide, but probably the two important ones there are for those that there shouldn't be any colour blindness issues in this one. Is the purple slide at the top, which is your amphetamines, and that probably mirrors what Don spoke about before in the rise of amphetamine detections, and also your it's a darker colour, the one that starts right at the top and ends pretty close to the bottom, which is your heroin. Again, it shows a big decline in heroin detections, and your other drugs, ecstasy. There's a rise in ecstasy. There's reasons around why. Previously being the commander of the drug squad for a couple of years, you had to look at that that issue as well. And there has been an increase in the different types of drugs that are used, and the social use of trend towards drugs, particularly MDMA or ecstasy, which can find many forms, such as amphetamine, which is thought to be MDMA. But really, the main thing for that is, I think, the reduction in heroin. Being a 28-year police officer, when I first started at a place called Blacktown, out in the western suburbs of Sydney, and on the beat there, I would see a lot of heroin addicted people that were largely fueling their heroin addiction through property crime. I don't see that as much now, so I think certainly that's a factor, and we'll probably have a bit more of a discussion about that later. This is a slide that shows your drug detections versus your break, enter and steal events. It doesn't really show that much, really, just to show that there's that correlation between drug detections going up and property offences going down, but I don't really think that there's that much in there. Types of break and enters. I suppose we need to look at, if you're going to look at why things have occurred or why there's been reductions, you need to look at what types of break and enters. Really, you could probably break them down into smaller categories, but two main ones: opportunistic and organised. Your opportunistic break enters are largely your volume break and enters. Your organised break enters are those committed by organised professional groups that are either doing it for theft or other purposes. Just recently in Sydney, we had a lot of commercial break, enter and steals occurring in business premises. I think there's about 70 odd offences that occurred over about a 3-4 month period, and they became violent offences. Some of them turned into armed robberies. Now, from a statistical correlation for break, enter and steals, and they were all break, enter and steals, they wouldn't really show up. But they were very significant. A lot of police activity was put into it, and those people, which were it was about six people, were arrested and charged, and we really haven't had very many commercial break and enter steals since. So that the police activity can have an effect there, but it doesn't really affect the overall break enter and steal reduction. Differences between opportunistic and organised, scale of proceeds, you know, what they're stealing. In some of the recent offences, there was between $200,000 to $1 million worth of property being stolen in some offences. So, and in your opportunistic volume break-enter and steals, you might lose a watch. You know, some people might just lose a sandwich out of the fridge. There's nothing else to steal. So. Their ability to dispose of the proceeds is a big factor. You need, if for organised thieves, you need a big receiving network. You need to be able to get rid of those properties. No good going out and stealing a B-double trailer full of San Remo pasta if you can't get rid of it commercially. You can eat a lot of pasta. I like pasta, but certainly. About 10 ton from the back of a truck, just take you too long, I think it'd go off. But you need to be able to get rid of it. So the receiving is a big issue. And in that that investigation with those major receivers, we focused on receivers. And the receivers took us to the main crooks. So you've really got to look at that receiving network and how that can be affected. For your opportunistic break, enter and steals, there still has to be, if you're getting rid of it for some sort of a profit, there still has to be that receiving network available, your ability to dispose of that those goods. But sometimes people take it for, they might covet that type of property. It might be an Xbox or a PS3 or an iPad or something that they want for themselves, although you know, those Apple products tend to be very hard to transfer ownership. The capacity to store it, again, no good trying to steal a big B-double full of San Remo pasta if you can't store it somewhere. The level of planning and complexity of the differences in them, opportunistic break and enters, they might be the as simple as someone leaving a window open and someone saying, well, that window's open, I'll go and break into that house and see what I can steal, to the level of planning we were seeing in recent operations where these this criminal group was planning their operations as good as we were planning our operations against them. So they certainly have showed a very high level of planning, to the point where if something went wrong, they would stop doing the, you know, that one small thing, they would stop the operation completely, which is shows a level of professionalism and organisation. And the level of risk, you know, if there's a risk reward return. If I can see that there's no one home at a house and I'll go in and quickly nab something, there's a low level of risk compared to, again, probably a low level of reward, but the reward's higher than the level of risk. In your professional, organised break-enter people, they have a bit lower threshold for their or level of reward compared to their risk. They'll risk a lot more for a lot more proceeds. Motivation, intimidation, extortion. And so, well, why is that there? Well, again, that comes probably back to our breaking in with intent. Some of those kidnapping offences and others, there is a breaking in thrown in there as well. Impact on the business of another. Sometimes there's a breaking in that may occur to disrupt someone's business. Again, these are the minority, and they're not really showing having any effect on the trend of these, but they're still significant. Or commit other further offences, domestic violence, sexual assaults. They're not the primary offence, but sometimes breaking in with intent is still one of the offences that comes on there. Then we come to our more our sort of volume. Break-enter and steals, your boredom, youth-related. I think previously we were seeing a lot of that. You would have you know, youths on the street and they would commit break-and-enters, whether that was for because of boredom or to get property that they wanted, or to make a small dollar out of some of the property they were stealing. But there's, these days now, I think there's, and Ray spoke about, touched on it briefly, I think there's a lot of diversion for youth now, which in my view has had some way of affecting the levels of that. I don't have a large amount of evidence about it, but I think that that certainly is a factor. You know, I know from kids, and there's probably a lot of people with kids here, it's very hard to get them off the Xbox, PlayStation, iPad, iPhone, iTouch, all those things, to get them out of the house and actually go and kick a football around or ride a bike. So to get them out and go and do a break-in or steal is, I suppose, is difficult as well in those areas. Now, that might also have an effect in some of the areas out in Western New South Wales, where there is increases in break-enter and steal offences, and those youth, I would say, probably wouldn't have the PlayStations, iPads, iPod touches and all those other things that are there, and they may be out roaming the streets and causing some of that crime. Profit, you either do something for a profit or for some personal gain. Very rare do we see people doing it for no apparent reason. So there you come into your, those offences there, we can largely group into your commit other felony and then your break, enter and steal offences. So why? So we come to that big question, why? What's caused the reduction? Drug environment, reduced availability of heroin. Don spoke about it before. I think that certainly is one of the factors. I don't think it's the factor, but I certainly think it's one of the factors that has influenced it. And not that I ever want to see it happen again. If there was a rise in heroin usage and supply out in the streets, I think we may see an increase in property crime. Other drugs now more commonly detected, your amphetamines, your MDMA, cannabis, which has been around for forever, but your amphetamine analogues. A lot of clever chemists out there creating other drugs, and the price. Now, I didn't bring figures about prices of drugs, but certainly MDMA, although it's not as cheap as it is other parts of the world, it's still a reasonably affordable drug that doesn't have the ongoing addiction problems that you get with heroin. Different demographic, different people, as we discussed before, with where people are living, what people are living in certain areas, what factors are influencing those people, the different drug environment when they're consuming it, why level of dependence again, your dependence on heroin, that requirement to get money to feed your addiction may not be as great. Increasing stimulant drugs, methamphetamine. People say, well, why hasn't this... Now you talk about ICE and methamphetamine, particularly you'll hear Gordian Fulda speak about it in Vincent's Hospital, about the issues with ICE-affected people coming in. I don't know the answer to that, but certainly there doesn't seem to be that correlation with the increase in methamphetamine to an increase in break, enter and steal offences. That may be around the fact of manufacture, price and other things, They must be able to convert the stolen property to cash or other benefits in order to profit from the offence. Pretty simple concept. Market demand, level of risk are therefore key considerations. Economic conditions have been stable, well, pretty much stable, depends on how your household is and how you budget yourself, but they've been pretty stable over the last 10 years. Don spoke about that before. I think that's a factor. I think in the good times we tend not to have a large amount of unemployed people that are stealing, particularly in youth unemployment. People are happy. There's less crime being committed, I think. We spoke about youth unemployment, and it's probably a simple concept, but I think simple concepts are sometimes the best. when you've got less people with less time on their hands to get up to badness, they don't get up to as much badness. So I think it's as simple as that. The market, rapidly changing technology. We look at the items that are stolen. I know when I bought my first flat screen television, I think it cost me about $5,000. I think we saved up for a long time to do that. And that same television, I can probably go into Harvey Norman or one of the discount retail chains and buy for about $500 now, and that's brand new. So there's just not that market, the rapidly changing technology, that things aren't around as long and don't hold their value. So there's very little reason to steal them, and I can easily go and buy them. Reduction in the cost of items again. iPads, iPhones, those things, they're all going down in price. This is something for the future. Look at the acceptance of online purchasing. One of the things that we are seeing in property crime, and I'll speak about it a little bit later. We've done a lot over the years to sort of reduce the availability of receivers. But your areas, your online auction sites and online sales sites that are now ever increasing on our computer screens, they're, I think, fueling a lot of. I think that's the way of the future for our. People can dispose of property online quite easily, relatively anonymously. And we've seen that in recent investigations with a lot of property. And I can dispose of property. I don't have to go down to the pub and flog my stuff from the back of a truck or the back of a ute. I can sell something to the United States, England, Vietnam, anywhere in the world by putting it on eBay and selling. And the other thing with your online sales is that, and I would anticipate that most people here are aware of it, and if not all of you, I would say the majority of you have used those sites at some time. Everyone wants a bargain. Everyone expects a bargain, and everyone accepts that they will get a bargain online. So that business about, I used to be able to prove a goods in custody, where I'd have to reasonably suspect that the property of being stolen or otherwise unlawfully obtained. So some of the knowledge had to be on that, around the goods, but and also from what the people are saying, and I might be, I'm challenged by Mr. Cowdery, but we had to prove something around that property. Now, and also some of the intent on that person as to what they thought of it. Now, if I can go on and buy something that on eBay for $100 when I know that, if I go down the road and buy it, it's $1,500, I know that that's just a bargain. It's not stolen. So that's building in that belief in people that these aren't stolen. So it's legitimising the disposal of that property in some way. Access to global online stores and sellers. So we've got an international market for our stolen property now. So these are things to consider in the future. Some of the good things we have done, and Don spoke about it before, the regulation of the second-hand dealers and pawnbrokers. That had a big reduction in the availability of disposal of a lot of that volume breakener and steel material. Requirement to produce identification, requirement to hold it for 14 days, improved record keeping, police powers to audit, and a lot of that was online. So we were keeping ahead of them, and it really took a lot of that market away. So what we used to call, from a police perspective, we would call pawnbrokers licensed receivers. That's really taken away and legitimised that business. I hope there's no pawnbrokers here, but that was the reality of it. And the provision of those records. Changes in the environment. Improved security. I think we've done a lot over the years to improve the security of our premises, alarms, CCTV. I think a lot of us here would probably have alarms in our houses where 10 years ago we probably wouldn't have. The price of those items has come down. It's not exorbitant to put an alarm on your house, and a lot of people are using them. A lot of that was also driven by public awareness, which police, government, and non-government areas push. I think the message has got out there. Increased awareness of security. People need they know that gone are the days when I was a kid, not so much in Blacktown, but when I went and visited my parents in safer areas. We would leave the doors and windows open of a night and a hot night. You don't do that now. We've all got air conditioning, so we don't have to. Those are the things that we know. We know that you do lock the doors. You do turn the alarm on. I hope you do turn the alarm on of a night time. We do all those things, so we're more aware. Application of crime prevention by design. There's a couple of other words in there, but I haven't got it in front of me. But a lot of those areas have worked in. The councils, local government have pushed a lot of those crime designs. Designing a place like Mount Druitt, which was designed around the 60s. From a crime prevention perspective, from a break, enter and steal crime prevention perspective, it was a nightmare. You've got alleyways leading everywhere. There's access and escape routes for criminals. There's all sorts of things. There's poor lighting, poor all sorts of things that really have an effect on that. So we've come a long way in those areas. Police promotion of security, neighbourhood watch, and look, another thing we've used now with social media is iWatch, I'm not even on Facebook, I don't use social media, but we're promoting that, and it's the way of the future. I think the biggest country in the world is now Facebook. We're using that, and we're putting out crime prevention messages. We're letting people know where, if there's a spike in break, enter and steals or other offences in an area, that's occurring. And if people get on their website, they can put that or look at that information and do something about it. They can also provide the police with information. So the use of those sort of tools, getting on with the 21st century, and I think there's a long way to go. Also, I suppose from the other side of social media, there's also online disposal through social media. I've heard of areas where criminals can dispose of proceeds between themselves on a closed Facebook site. So the crooks will use those initiatives as well. Police practices. Now, what have we done? We've done a lot. Well, we've done something. We have introduced crime prevention officers. Previously, when I first started, we didn't have that, and we would have thought that was silly, but it's not. It's around having someone in a local area command. Each local area command has a crime prevention officer that focuses on crime prevention, and a big way of the way that these have been reduced. One of the main factors is through crime prevention. So, we focused on that. Intelligence-led policing principles. An effective allocation of resources. Being an old crime manager from Bankstown, we have tasking and deployment meetings where we're looking at where the crime's occurring and focusing our resources on that. It might sound simple, but it's something that hasn't been around since the ARC. So we've put that in place, and it really is an effective way of addressing crime problems, and it has had an effect. Our STMP, our Suspect Target Management Plan, is basically around looking at the people that are committing your crime in the area and focusing on them. Rightly or wrongly, we don't apologise for targeting people that are recidivist criminals. The word recidivist probably says why we do that. They've shown a propensity to keep doing that, and so we target them, and it seems effective. You either prevent them from committing crime, or you lock them up, which again prevents them. Different powers. We talked about knife powers, increasing police powers where it's appropriate to provide them to us for a purpose, and if it's effective, well, I think it's a good thing. Some people might disagree with me. Operation and Crime Review, it's now called Compass. I went to one just recently, and one of the main issues spoken about was steal from motor vehicle. Now, people might say, well, we've got murders and we've got robberies and we've got other things, but your volume crime is a bit of an indication of where you're at as a society to a certain extent, and Compass focuses on that. and looks at what those that region is doing to address those crime problems. And they look at ways that some areas like Lira Commands or region are doing some things that they're doing better, and tries to cross-pollinate that across the whole organisation. So it's a good thing. We've rolled out scene of crime officers, which has had an effect. We've done a lot in DNA and fingerprints, and we try and get to each break, enter and steal and use those forensic techniques that everyone sees on CSI and everyone believes works 100% every time, and the police can get a fingerprint off just about everything, even a drop of water, but which has its problems for us in convincing people we can't, but we've certainly gone a long way in that. Adaption of programs, keeping up with developing trends and social media or other things. We're tracing Apple products using their mobile me and GPS and all sorts of other things that they're all good, but trying to keep up with technology, which is difficult for all of us. Is there a definitive answer as to why it's decreased? Well, really, there's no absolute answer. I think it's a combination of factors with multiple possibilities, and we've discussed a bit of that here today. There's no single cause. I'd love to be up here saying that it's the result of wonderful action by the New South Wales Police Force, but I can't say that. We're one of the factors, but we're certainly not the only factor. As I said, likely to be a combination of the market demand, as we said before, perceived risks versus the perceived benefit. Changed environment, increased awareness, police initiatives and practices, and I left out that drug factor, which I think is certainly a factor.